Welcome home. We are WNST, Towson, Baltimore. Baltimore Positive. We are positively here. One of my favorite places. It's new, but it feels old. Only been here about 3 months. The new Lexington Market. Fadley's moved from about 40 yards to the north of here, to the south. We're down here at the new Lexington Market. It's all brought to you by our friends at the Maryland Lottery. I will have some Lucky 7 scratch-offs to give away. And I've got great guests. Luke's going to be coming by today. It's All-Star Game Week. Yankees are in town. It's not often that I get to meet people who've been on my show. Maybe I said to Damie probably 20 times, and maybe more than that over the last 15 years since I came back on the air. Pete Caldera has covered the New York Yankees for 24 years, according to your LinkedIn. It says 2000. Is that right?
Yeah, I guess this would be year 24. Wow.
Wow. All right. So, how many championships? Just two, maybe one or two, right?
'09 was it.
That's really it.
Yeah. Yeah, my first year on the beat, they went to the 03 World Series against the Marlins. And, 09 and a lot of ALCS losses and a lot. It's been way too long for most people in New York, I'll tell you that.
Well, I mean, you have a great gig that you sing standards, like my friend Slim Manicotti, who was in town the other day over at La Scala. So shout out to Tim Camp and Slim. But I want to talk some music with you at some point. But
sure.
My vibe with you, and Luke's going to come by and we're going to talk more trading deadline and like,
yeah.
But like the gig of covering baseball, I covered baseball from 1986 until Angelos threw me out in 07. So I had 21 years where I was in and out of the locker room at the old Yankee Stadium, Fenway, a couple pennant races, playoff games. I was looking down the right field line from the former auxiliary press box at Yankee Stadium when I saw Jeffrey Mayer's arms go over the whiz sign in the right field wall. I was 15 yards away down the line. I'm like, he reached over the wall. I saw it with my eye.
Right.
So all of this being said, I have not been afforded a media credential by the Orioles, but other teams credential me. I get around a little bit. I've been in the new Yankee Stadium as a media member.
Right.
How has it changed? Because, I mean, I've been out of it for 16 years. They allow my Caucasian employee, famously Luke Jones, to have a press pass. He'll be there today. But I haven't been around it. Covering the Yankees was always much more of an ecosystem, especially when you guys would show up here. You would bring this contingent that would take over the whole third base side of the press box.
Yeah. You see, I mean, it's a lot. It is a lot different. I mean, the coverage is different. The media is different. You know, as newspapers have kind of faded back or become digital entities, that's all changed. Yeah, you used to see when we came to Baltimore, especially. It didn't matter if the Orioles were good or bad, if the Yankees were down or not, but they usually were up. That you would see the New York Daily News and the New York Post and Newsday and the Times bring not just their beat writer but a columnist, and maybe one of the daily tabloids would have a feature writer too or a sidebar guy. Now you're lucky if you get one entity that's along for the ride on the road. And sometimes when you're at Yankee Stadium and a team from a smaller market comes in,
they bring nobody. You, literally,
right? It's a ghost town up there sometimes. So it's that part of the that aspect of the job has changed a lot. Yeah, you're used to seeing all these great guys. I used to grow up reading all the columnists and things like that, and you don't see those guys anymore.
I had Rick Tellender on this week because he played the Cubs earlier in the week, and I worked out in Chicago at the turn of the century when I was syndicated. So I've been in every stadium. I've been everywhere, man. Like Johnny Cash. I've seen this change dramatically with team websites. And look, man, I don't call them fake reporters, but they're kind of fake reporters because they really are under the arm of whether it's Yes Network, whoever they work for. The press conferences aren't nearly like here, certainly never what they were in New York, but tough questions. And when I had Mike Vaccaro on last year, just tough questions. I mean, I saw they threw Howard Eskin out in Philadelphia, and I've known Howard for, I don't know what happened there, but they want less tough questions, and they want more in-house, and sort of the industry's played into that a little bit. I mean, on the Ravens side, when the Ravens came here in 96, I have a picture of me in San Diego around Ted Marchibrode in 1997, and I counted like 16 traveling Baltimore people at an NFL game 25 years ago.
Right.
Now there's two.
Yeah.
There's two. And there used to be the Sun would send two photographers, right? I mean, we would play at Yankee Stadium. It's the same thing. Baltimore media would travel, make those kinds of subway trips, train trips, easy, get in the car kind of trips. Wait, how often do you travel? Do you go to half the games?
I used to, probably before the pandemic, it was almost everywhere all the time. And now it's scaled back. But certainly I'm not alone in that distinction. There are other beat writers that certainly travel less. And I think it's part of the wider landscape of where the business is at now and frankly, bottom lines of companies. But
whenever you have a Japanese player, there's a whole contingent there too, right?
Well, that
changes everything as well, as I remember.
I miss having Masahiro Tanaka on the team because it was fun to have the Japanese press there. And it was a lot of pressure. I mean, I'm old enough to have covered most of Matsui's career too. And having to watch him go through, not only the our questions and then the Japanese press, but basically do everything twice and do it in such a kind and gentle and informative way, because he had a great personality and Tanaka was much the same.
You weren't around for Arabu, though.
No, I wasn't around for Arabu. I mean, it's an interesting dynamic going on in Los Angeles with Ohtani that, where they're trying to get him to talk. I mean, he doesn't provide that access and as much.
And Ichiro was so cool, the club allows it.
Ichiro was fun to cover because he had so much to say about his opinions and if you brought it out of him, it was a real fun interview. And he had, obviously, he's one of the greatest players that we've seen come by in the last 50 years.
Transcended.
But he was very accessible, as was Matsui, as was Tanaka, and those were interesting guys to cover. They had a lot to offer.
Pete Caldera is here. He covers baseball, but the New York Yankees. We don't hold that against him for the Bergen record. I've never met him because I haven't had a press pass in 17 years.
Talked a lot.
Luke sits in the – yeah, I mean, and I love talking baseball with smart people, especially I love the music angle on your gig. And we'll get to the, like, on the field. But the All-Star game, how many of those have you covered? Because I covered maybe 16, 17 All-Star games, through the course of years.
I've covered three.
Okay.
And two were in New York. The one at the last
I covered both of those.
Yankee Stadium, the first one at Citi Field in, what was it, 2013?
Yes,
and then the only other one I covered, and it probably jinxed me for the rest of the it was the one in Milwaukee that went 15 innings that never
that
ended, where Joe Torre had to go to Bud Selig and say, I'm out of pitchers. and then what spiraled out of that was that MLB created that that ridiculous who wins the All-Star game has the home field advantage to make it
more interesting.
This one counts in the World Series, which was all sorts of ridiculous. And you're old enough to remember as I am when we were kids, the All-Star game was huge. And I grew up, I was a giant Mets fan in an era when the Mets were horrendous.
Sending no one. Crane pool once in a while would make it, right?
John Stearns was our all-star for three straight years. We got Lee Mazzilli one time. And I look forward to that because the other part of that was, this was the this was before ESPN, before MLB Network, before all the highlights you saw. This was when This Week in Baseball was appointment viewing when you were a kid, because that's the only time you got to see the highlights.
Well, we're the same age. I think you went to Hofstra. I did a little. I'm 55. We're same era. Right,
exactly. Late 50s. So I am, I'm of that era that I can't believe you were covering baseball in 86. I was a sophomore in college watching the Mets win the World Series.
I left the game early.
Okay.
I left the game early when Dykstra hit the home run.
Oh, my gosh.
I was in the upper deck at Shea Stadium.
I was in the upper deck at Shea Stadium when he hit that home run off Dave.
Not Major Deegan, that's on your
Dave
side. I'm
Smith,
thinking the Shea, wherever it was.
Grand Central Parkway.
Yeah, Queens, whatever the hell it
was. Yeah, that's where he was.
Pete Caldera is here, and we're talking some baseball. It's All-Star Game week, and the thing about Baltimore and you coming down here for all of the years, and you mentioned a lot more bad than good here, certainly, right? And Yankees fans always traveling. What do you make of the resurrection of the Orioles franchise in a way where games sold out tomorrow? Now, there'll always be Yankees fans there. But coming to Baltimore after the 4th of July, before the All-Star break, and the Orioles are in first place with some of the best talent in the sport, with this arsenal of loaded minor league possibilities in the trading deadline. My last name's Aparicio. I get it this honest. You know, I've been doing this since the beginning, right? Yeah. I've been on the radio 33 baseball seasons now and covered really sports here for 41 years now. My 41st summer as a professional journalist here, I've never seen anything like it, because the trajectory of where this could go over the next 3 to 5 years, as new ownership, Cal Ripken's involved, they have very, very capable baseball people, all the missing ingredients that you would come down here and say, what happened to this place? Because that went on for anybody our age. Talk about those bad Mets teams of the 70s. I wondered what that would be like, and now I've lived it for most of the last 30 years.
I think it's great. You know what? Well, listen, it's a great fan base, first of all. It's one of the jewel destination ballparks in the country. They deserve to have a winner here all the time, a competitive team. And, you know, it was disheartening, you know, personally, when you would come down here and, you know, the Yankees were the Yankees and the Orioles were having a down year. And how many times did I write it felt like Yankee Stadium South here when the Yankees would play, because that's how it was. You'd get 20,000 people in the stands, and sound like 17,000 were Yankee fans.
Well, you come
sometimes
to what a guy from Jersey or New York guy would say, a baseball town, and the baseball's gone.
Yeah.
You know, I don't think you could envision going to St. Louis at this point and not seeing the lights turned on in
Chicago,
way. Even in places like Cincinnati, where it hasn't been great, the people have still stayed there and Coors supported it. This thing was so, and then this thing got divided too. I mean, the Washington part of this and the Masson part of this and the Washington success, you know, the fact that they've had a parade down there and played playoff games, it really, I mean, coming from a Ravens side versus whatever they're calling the football team down there this week, and the Capitals have had great success with a legendary, you know, iconic athlete, Ovechkin, the last 2 decades, I'm feeling like we're going into the beginning of that with Rutschman and Henderson, and it's all signs that this is that Cal Eddy era again for baseball people.
Yeah, and can you sustain it? That's the other thing. We've seen the Orioles go through these, you know, these up phases, and then, you know, then it kind of peters out, and I would hate to see that. But how loaded are the Orioles? When you've got Mayo and Holiday not even up here right now, and they're two of the biggest.
And we're trying to figure out, are they dealable? Or we'll do that with Luke a little bit later. But it really is an incredible cupboard. When I've been on this radio station for 26 years at trading deadlines, year after year, we're like, well, we got Keegan Aiken, we've got Dylan Bundy, but we'd never want to give him away. He's the only top 100 arm we have, you know?
Yeah.
And that goes back to Rocky Coppinger and Alex Ochoa for you old Mets guys, right?
Those are some names,
every year this has been part of it, because every year, whether you're a buyer or a seller, you're involved in the trading. Even when you stink, you're involved in the trading deadline, except we stunk so bad we didn't even have, you know, beyond a random B.J. Surhoff to trade away at the trading deadline. We didn't even have that sort of involvement, and now it's all hands on deck. The Yankees are nervous. We're in first place. You're mentioning Mayo and these guys that haven't even gotten here yet, and we're trying to figure out Mullins, Hayes, Santander's going to the All-Star game now, trying to figure out Mateo and Urias around the edges. But then there's, like, Hayes, who was an All-Star last year, and Mullins, who was a 30-30 guy.
Yeah.
And these are the guys that are getting pushed. I mean, we took the scrap heap from the Yankees last year and got 250 pretty good at-bats that the Yankees paid for. That's unusual, too,
It is. And then, no, I'll be very interested to see what the Orioles do here at the deadline, because obviously they've got some pitching needs. You know, how they've been able to, you know, cobble it together with the rotation they have has been very impressive. But then, of course, Burns at the top is, that was a bold move and a necessary one to make before the season began. But, you know, it seems like a lot of these contenders obviously they're in the market for the same thing. Bullpen help, obviously, for the Yankees, that's a number one priority right now, because, you know, they do have five healthy starters in their rotation. They're going to get Clark Schmidt back at some point in August. Maybe you transition Luis Gil to a multi-inning bullpen role, possibly. They haven't talked about that, at least not publicly, but it's an option they have to shore up their bullpen. But I'll be very interested to see what the Orioles are willing to give up. I would think that they would, if there's a bold move they can make, based on how good that team was last year and how disappointed it was to have that short a playoff run, that,
they went and got Jack Flaherty last year, and we thought that was going to be a thing, right? So, buyer beware at all these trading.
Of course.
Come on, man, you're old school like me, man. You know, you make these deals, and as Luke has pointed out, and he may do that again when he gets here, they win the World Series, it's going to be because of Henderson and Rutschman and Burns and Rod Reed. The guys they've already got are going to be the reason they win the World Series. It's not going to be specifically because of middle relief or specifically because they can improve upon a third starter. But, I mean, they've, for as good as they've been and as deep as they are, Bradish, Means, Wells, then you throw Bautista in and what he represented last year for them.
Right.
This is if you would have said to me the day after they lost to the Rangers that this is where they would sit from a health perspective, I'd say they're a 500 team and bordering on disappointment. And to your point, they've managed to get these innings out of Suarez. They've managed to get mileage out of Irvin at this point. So I would – and we're always afraid of the big bag Yankees. I mean, Yankees come off the bus, and they got the pinstripes, and, they got Aaron Judge and Soto. I always think that there's this – you're always worried about the Yankees stalking you.
Yeah, but the swagger and confidence factor, certainly in the Orioles it's on the Orioles side right now. You know, they've beaten this team, what, 5 out of 7 so far?
And he beat down the last time they got together, right?
Yeah.
And bad blood.
Yes. I mean that last game, the Yankees were using a catcher to pitch the last inning, right? It was such a blowout. 3 out of 4 of the Orioles won here after when the Yankees came in the first time in late April, early May. Listen, the Orioles are not afraid of anybody, least of all the Yankees, because they've had their number. So, I don't think there's any intimidation factor going there.
Which is unusual. First time in your professional career you've seen anything like this.
Right, Judge is Judge, and Soto is Soto. But, there's a lot of places you can pitch in that lineup and get out right now. And right now, Judge is one of them. He's coming in here and it's not a slump, but it's a slide. And he did have a rough April where he was hitting under 200 before like May 2nd, and then got on that incredible historic run. Winning the Player of the Month in May, winning the Player of the Month in June. I mean, he was on that 62 plus. Home run pace again, too, and hitting 300 plus, and contributing defensively in center field. Right now, he's it's in a bit of a slide. He's DHing more to get him off his feet. You may see him DH twice in this series with Grisham playing in center field. So they're trying to do some things right now. It seems like to get Judge back on track. This is certainly a Yankee lineup you can navigate right now.
Pete Caldera is here. He sings. Tell everybody out there about your incredible moonlighting is what I would call. You're a moonlighter is what you are in a big city up there in Gotham.
My little sidelight there. It's a lot of fun. I've always loved Sinatra and that big band music and all those great singers, Tony Bennett and Bobby Darin and Nat Cole and Mel Torme. That's my music. Always has been my music.
As I wear my Van Halen belt buckle here, today. But I love all that music too, right? Because I have it. I love Tom Jones and Engelbert Humperdinck as offshoots of all of that. Lou Rawls is widely played in my condo.
Well, and I grew up in a household that, if you can imagine this, my mom is the big Sinatra fan and Perry Como and all those great singers of the 40s and 50s. My dad is an opera fan, every Saturday morning. He's blasting live from the Met, and I grew up with that, and I became got an appreciation of that too. I don't know a word they're saying, but I certainly
all these beautiful Italian arias, right?
A Verdi and a Puccini is it's excellent, and now I've got to go to the opera with my dad in the last few years too, which is even greater. But so I had an interesting home musical grounding, and that's the music I kind of gravitated towards. At least was the when I found all my
moms. Or as Harry Connick once told me when I interviewed him 35 years ago,
yeah.
Good music.
Well, there's only two, right? It's good and bad. It's good or bad, right? So then I remember my mom allowing me to take a lot of her Sinatra albums to college with me, and I put them on cassette tape.
Right on, transfer them.
Record
them.
Deal with words a lot, right?
Yeah.
So then I had them, and I had those tapes in my car, and I was listening to them in my car, and then, of course, you sing along with them, too, and then you go to a karaoke night or two or a piano bar, and somebody tells you, hey, you sounds pretty good. Why don't you get with
blowing in.
Why don't you get with a band or something? Well, who gets with a band in this era? But you live in New York City.
You can find musicians.
They're doing this music. So, I remember going.
How long ago was this then?
This
is in your adulthood?
Yeah.
Oh, very much so.
Yeah, so about 2005 or 6.
So you're out of college covering the Yankees, and this is something that kind of became a fun thing for you.
Oh, yeah.
Okay, all right.
This was definitely just a whim.
I met Michael Bublé at the Chicago All-Star Game 2003.
Yeah.
Does that sound right? Three. It was three because two was Milwaukee.
And he's
three was Chicago All-Star Game.
Yeah.
Bublé, I met him in the hotel lobby. I saw him in the celebrity whatever. I barely knew who he was. Super nice guy. Unbelievably personable dude. And then he's become like 21 years later this big star. I saw him get interviewed by Dan Rather on that show. He was sort of discovered by Trudeau, and there's a whole thing about it, but no one believed that his music, he would say, I would go to, like, they would look at me and say, sorry, kid, nobody's going to buy this music,
right? They're not playing it on the radio.
So
that's
2005, when you're trying to do this, Bublé's kind of like making, but I even looked at him, I'm like, you're a nice kid, and I like Sinatra, but who's going to buy this, you know, right? I know Sinatra's dead, but this is sort of a little thing. And he's become the modern, the next thing, right?
And you mentioned Harry Connick kind of before him. He was always compared to Sinatra, but sort of unfairly. Well, Sinatra wasn't not a musician, couldn't play piano and sing or do that. He could, you know, the greatest interpreter of American popular music is all Frank was, right? But if you
haven't seen One for My Baby, One for the Road, you just, right? I mean, there's the Top Hat, the whole deal.
It's acting.
It's theatrical, story,
but
sure.
But, of course, we could go in a whole hour about, all the great things that Sinatra can do that no one else could
ever do
and can never do again musically. But those guys, I mean, certainly Bublé and Connick. I saw Connick live. I never saw Bublé live, but obviously listened to a lot of his stuff.
He played the gala.
But he played
the gala in 2003 at the All-Star game. It was in the big thing in Chicago where Grant Park is.
I'm sorry I wasn't there.
He played, but nobody knew who he was.
Nobody knew who he was.
No, he was playing the cop. Michael Bublé.
Yeah, who is this? Yeah, some nice kid from Canada who's got a nice voice. But that's it. But right, who's doing this music? Well, there's a show that's been playing in New York it's been going on for 20 plus years at the Carnegie Club on West 56th Street. Every night, two shows, just Sinatra, a singer with a big band. And I went up to the, I used to watch this show, come to the show a lot. And first Carrie Hoffman was the singer with the Stan Urban Orchestra. And after him, it's Steve Maglio, who's still there doing a great job singing with Stan's orchestra. But hold on.
When I'm in Manhattan on a Tuesday night, I can go to this place.
Saturday night.
It's only Saturday. Okay.
Yeah.
All right.
So I got in contact with Stan Rubin, the band leader, and I said, if your singer ever needs a night off, I think I can do this stuff. And not only did he take my call, he auditioned me. And so I have been for the last 15 years kind of Stevens' backup. The three or four times he takes a night off from the Sinatra show, I'll sing with the big band, which is great. But now once a month on Fridays.
That's a thrill. When you say with a big band, how big's a big
band?
Well,
it's 11 pieces at the Carnegie Club because it's really not a music venue. It's,
sure.
It's a cigar bar. But when we play at other venues, bigger venues like Swing 46, for instance, it's a 14-piece band, and the orchestra's there, and they're
Man, I bet they're getting after with some
phenomenal
brass, right?
It sounds it's like
I want to come see you, Pete.
It's like being in front of it's like driving a Ferrari or something. It's like the power of that engine behind you is.
Well, I mean,
incredible.
As a guy who sings karaoke and I sang in a band,
yeah.
I have a local band, buddies of mine, Ron West, and the Cultivated, and they play. I went out last year, and they wanted me to sit in and sing a song.
Yeah.
And I'm like, I don't even know the guys in the band's name, right?
Right.
And they just insisted that I do this alarm song called Strength. I knew the words, knew I could sing it. I got up, I did it, but there was something about the power of the beat, of the drum. Like,
yeah.
I just got up on a whim with a band to do it, and there's something different with a band than there is singing to a click track or singing to karaoke.
Yeah.
I mean,
there's a
power involved in that.
It is. And, it's always live musicians. Always use live musicians. I've heard Sinatra say numerous times in interviews and throughout his career that there is nothing he loved better than singing in front of a live nightclub audience, and that's the kind of thing we try to create or recreate on those Friday nights when I'm. I'll be there on July 19th. I'll be there again. I think August 22nd.
Summer months. He's up in the Catskills. Is that what's going on?
Well, this is just the Fridays with the small band.
Oh, okay.
I haven't gotten a Saturday yet that I know of. In fact, the last Saturday I think I did was was back in January.
Okay.
With that, but I like. I really like doing the small band stuff just as well because, you know, it's kind of like for you Sinatra aficionados out there, the 1962 World Tour Sinatra did. He went everywhere one summer, and he just took a sextet with him. And they shrunk down all those great Nelson Riddle and Billy May arrangements with the big bands and just did it with a sextet. And it was phenomenal, and it was such pure singing because it was, you know, and Sinatra always said, and I'll always remember saying that
right?
He was right. You know, you're part of the orchestra, and he grew up in an orchestra. Obviously, he started with the Tommy Dorsey, started with the Harry James, and then went to the Tommy Dorsey band. He learned how to be a musician with an orchestra. He learned how to be a musician in the band, and that's at best what you're trying to do as a singer. You're a horn in the orchestra.
Love this. Pete Caldera is here for the Bergen Record. I'm going to break on
I'm
that.
I'm stealing all Frank's
Luke's
stuff
here.
With that.
We're not going to talk any Sinatra with you. This is my resident baseball nerd.
Right,
he's going to talk analytics. We're going to talk trades. If you mention win-loss records, he gets upset with me at all this. Win-loss records for teams. The only thing that matters is I finally met Pete 30 minutes ago. We're going to get him a crab cake. We're down here at Fadley's. The Maryland Lottery's got us going. Jiffy Lube MultiCare has got us out on the road, as well as Liberty Pure Solutions, making our water crystal clear. But I never met Pete. And, like, he hadn't been over here. But this is the first time, like, 20 years I've been having this guy on the radio show. We're in first place. It's July. So, I mean.
Yeah.
I could have had you at any point, and it never would have been this kind of. We have a real baseball conversation.
This is really good.
Even though I'd love to talk Sinatra all night. Favorite Sinatra song? You got one?
Oh, you know what? The favorite one I love singing right now, and it's with the big band, is Cole Porter's "In the Still of the Night" with a Johnny Mandel arrangement that goes a lot of great places. And it's Cole Porter.
Do you do "Send
Sinatra
in the Clowns"? Do you do?
I don't do that one. That's a great Sinatra. Love that song.
Isn't it rich?
Little Night
yeah,
Music,
there you go. I like
Sondheim.
That. Right.
Yeah,
that's one of his favorites.
Listen, you mentioned "One for My Baby." That's no one else but Frank could do.
I love "Summer Wind" too. I'm a "Summer
Wind's"
guy.
A great song.
Yeah,
"Summer Wind's" a great song.
The way you look tonight,
you can't go wrong with anything Cole Porter. "I've Got You Under My Skin" with the greatest arrangement ever written, Nelson Riddle's arrangement for that song in 1956 from Songs for Swingin' Lovers. as we all have.
You can
that
tell
album
he's introduced these songs, you know?
Yes.
Tell me about the band, Pete.
Little
Pete,
patter.
Pete Calderas here. We're going to get a crab cake. We're down here at Fadley's. At some point, I'm going to, you know what? I got my lottery tickets, and they're in my bag, and I put my bag over here. I just want to hold them out because I actually got some Pac-Mans, too. I brought some, I have a stack of Gold Rush 7s. Well, you're going to get, you know, you are of legal age, even though, you know, you're a New York resident or Jersey, wherever they house you folks up there. We're going to have these to give away here. We're also going to be taking the Maryland Crab Cake Tour back out on the road next month. And the Oyster Tour begins the day the Ravens season begins. We're doing 26 Oysters, 26 different ways in 26 different days in September. Because it has an R, and we do R's and oysters and the oyster recovery, which I'm doing over here as well. Back for more from Fadley's. Luke's going to join us on the set. We're going to talk some baseball, all-star game, Yankees in town, Pete Caldera, my guest from the Bergen Record. Back for more downtown at Lexington Market. Stay with us.